Yeah. Uh-huh. Hey, what's up, guys? Thanks for joining us again on Keeping Up With The Leer. We're here with our second episode, Who Let The Leer Out?
Who?
Here again with me, DJ Zayas.
Dante Willem.
Jose Mata.
Marco Galgo.
Gabriel Trevino Jr., the third.
All right, and first things first, our main focus here, we're going to talk about why Shakespeare didn't include the Leer in scene 1, 2, or 3. Marco, you want to start us off?
Well, I believe that Lear's absence shows the motives and intentions of the other characters. Like, for example, we see how Edmund feels horrible about being an illegitimate son.
Illegitimate.
Thank you, Mr. Jose.
Thank you, sir. All right.
Illegitimate son. Additionally, we see how Gloucester rejects Edgar. What? Can you say that?
So anyway? Basically, the way that I took it here is that our Shakespeare starts off Act Two with subplots. The way that I see it is that with these subplots, these are more than likely going to be of importance later on into the play. DJ, anything?
I was just personally what I noticed was that if you look at it like when King Lear finally does return and Shakespeare includes him in scene 4. So Lear is... Well, actually, Lear comes back and he is super upset because the fact that Regan and Cornwall don't want to talk to him because they apparently are tired of travel and blah, 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 all that. And Lear actually gets super upset with this. And it ties back to what we were talking about in our last episode, how Lear is super like hot-headed and upset, and he can't really angry. Yeah, exactly. He can't really control his emotions.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that Lear is still being naive compared to Act One?
Oh, for sure. Like, he's definitely being naive. Kent tells him that Regan and Coral have like an offense against Lear, and Lear is still like, oh no, like this is can't be true. Like, I don't believe it. So like, going back, like, in the first act, he's still super naive, like, the same way he is now.
Yeah,
and,
like,
it's really brought out into light.
All right, now, Jose, would you like to tell us a bit about the time period?
Well, yeah, there's, so, like we discussed in our podcast for Act 1, that in this time period, women don't really have much say in really, like, anything. Well, so, here, Lear, his character, he's getting angry when his daughters are telling him what to do. But because he told them, I gave you everything, I gave you my entire kingdom, yet you betray me and you're still telling me what to do. Because that wasn't a social norm. Men were not accustomed to listening and doing what women said, especially not a man's daughters.
Thanks, Jose. Lear's optimism leads him to ignore the obvious. Just as Dante had said previously, Lear is still naive about what's going on, just as Act 1. Do you have anything to say about this, Gabriel? Do you have an example?
Yes, actually, Lear, sometime in scene 4, tells his daughter, Regan, that if she's truly not glad to see him, he will disown her and her mother.
But hold on. He says that her mother's dead. So, is this a sign that Lear was raising them on their own?
Oh.
Lear was raising his daughters on his own.
I think you might also be right, Mark.
Are Regan and Goneril, like, they're sisters, yeah, but do they have, like, different mothers or same mothers?
Hmm. Interesting.
And, you know, one thing I noticed in Act 1, and I'm not sure if I caught it when I was reading Act 2, but in Act 1, Lear definitely refers to his daughters. He always uses our. He always says our daughters, Regan, Goneril,
and Cordelia.
And Cordelia. And he just repeats our and our. So I don't know. I didn't know if...
Could these two correlate?
Yeah. So.
And also maybe that's why they want so much knights around them at all times to protect, just in case, so no one would hurt them.
Mm-hmm.
But he's just in denial of the fact that she's
so
dead.
He's kind of paranoid is why he doesn't want to leave
without
his train of knights.
Because and as of now, we don't really know if he has a wife or not.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's why he wants to sleep with his daughters.
And
you know how he has no one else.
Yeah, and this is pretty common for this time period for kings, especially kings, to have multiple wives and girlfriends and and so other lovers. They could have different mothers. Yeah, so they could have different mothers.
And maybe that's why he's not so harsh like a regular parent is towards even like a king, like not being harsh to anyone, because he just wants to his daughter to accept him, like, and not like try to damage anything they have.
Or maybe that's like the whole explanation of him like being naive or whatever. Like, it's really like a coping mechanism. Like, he doesn't want to believe that his daughters are like are wronging him, because like in reality, like that's all he has.
Okay,
that makes sense.
I agree.
That's just like how Reagan shows sympathy towards Lear when he runs out of the castle. But however, Goneril blames Lear for his own actions.
And she kind of just makes Reagan change her mind, so they both were on the same page. So she kind of just shut her down after she was trying to sympathize for her dad. So,
all right, now we're going to take a call from one of you viewers. So if you want to ring in at 1-800-648-040. Oh, we got our first caller. All right, who am I speaking with?
Emily from LA. My question is the Fool still Lear's only friend?
Okay, that's a great question, actually. I'm going to go with possibly one of the only few people who King Lear might still actually call a friend. Because in scene 4, the Fool actually comes in with some wisdom about how children actually make their parents blind. And then this is actually really good, because that is actually a major motive of the play.
Oh, do y'all hear that? You know what time it is?
Tea time!
All right, Marco, start us off hardier on tea time. Marco, take it away.
What's on the menu today, man?
For today's tea time, we figure out... So what do you think the storm in scene 4 represents, Jose?
Well, I think the storm in scene 4 represents Lear's life turning to complete disarray and chaos. And that's why when we see or we read that he runs outside, he's completely vulnerable to nature. And this can also be compared to how his daughters are just mentally attacking him and breaking him down.
All right, thank you, sir, for that input. And now let's get straight into the last minute roundup.
Yes, and why do you guys think Shakespeare didn't include King Lear as much as he could have in Act 2?
Well, I feel like other characters were really a lot more well-developed in this act, and I feel like that would have been hard with King Lear in these scenes. So we're finally able to understand the daughter's intentions and their motives for the things they were doing and their thoughts. So if King Lear was in all that, it would have just been the same, like, oh, we love you, and trying to deceive their father. All
right, that's pretty good. I'm gonna have to agree with my friend DJ here, because in scene 4, towards the very end, we actually find out that the daughters are actually glad that he's gone, and they actually see it as a punishment and something that he actually deserves.
Hey, that's pretty good, man. So I think that's all we have today for Keeping Up with the Lear. And now, this leaves us with one big question. Who left the Lear out?
Who?
See y'all next week. Thank you.